Soldier Today podcast is a product of the Non-Commissioned Officer and Soldier Programs Directorate at the Association of United States Army. Soldier Today subjects focus on those topics that are relevant and needed by our soldiers and their families serving the regular Army, Army National Guard, and the Army Reserve. Hello, everyone. I'm Sergeant Major of the Army, retired Dan Daly, and welcome to this edition of Soldier Today podcast. Today, we turn our focus to enlisted professional development and education with a discussion with Command Sergeant Major, retired John Sparks. As our Army and our nation continue to deal with multiple challenges it faces on a daily basis, professional development and educating play a critical role in the Army's ability to maintain readiness. Our guest, Command Sergeant Major Retired Sparks, has been focused on enlisted education and training for over two decades, serving in key positions while on active duty as the Combined Arms Center CSM at Fort Leavenworth, and then later as the Command Sergeant Major for United States Army Training and Doctrine Command. Following his service, John served as the first director of the Institute for Non-Commissioned Officer Professional Development and later transitioned to be the principal advisor on strategic education for the Sergeant Major of the Army. Throughout these roles, John has played an instrumental role in the advancement of enlisted education and the creation of the Non-Commissioned Officer Professional Development System. So this is a great subject to discuss, and Command Sergeant Major Retired Sparks is the right person to have the discussion with, and we are very fortunate to have him with us today. John, thank you for joining the Soldier Today podcast.
Thank you, SMA.
Well, John, I appreciate it. And if you don't mind, we'll jump right into the questions. And again, thanks for joining us today and being part of the Soldier Today podcast. I know our listeners out there would love to hear the insight that you've gained over almost two decades of training and educating our great soldiers. So, John, as I said, you've spent a lifetime serving our soldiers and our nation. I touched on a few of the key assignments that you've held, but could you share with our listeners a little bit about yourself? Where did you grow up and why did you decide to join the United States Army?
SMA, that's a great question. Again, I appreciate the opportunity to be here, and I appreciate you making time in your schedule to listen to whatever I can add to the discussion. So I guess my enlistment in the Army, it might be unorthodox to many, and certainly now it's probably not the normal path, but I grew up in and around the Detroit area, Detroit, Michigan, and I actually joined the Army on my 17th birthday. It was an experience that I'll never forget. I was in high school, and much to the consternation of many, I quit school in the 11th grade, actually went down the recruiter and swore in on my 17th birthday. It was the right decision for me at the time. It would be a bad decision for many, I suppose, but for me at the time, it was the right thing. And because the Army is such a wonderful place and a great place to learn and grow, I had a great sergeant that said, hey, you're going to finish high school now, so put me into the right program, and I probably actually graduated for my peers. And the reason I say that that's sort of a negative thing today is because it would be very difficult for a soldier to do what I did and may not be able to enlist at all. So that's how I ended up in the Army, probably in retrospect, one of my best decisions.
Well, thanks for sharing that. As many of our guests have, they all have their unique experiences in life that brought them to service in our nation, the United States Army. And we greatly appreciate you sharing yours. I just want listeners out there to know that John had a lifelong learning continuum. And actually, he's in the process of pursuing his PhD. So he continues on that journey as he did when he joined the Army when he was a young man. John, as I mentioned before, you served as both the Command Sergeant Major for the Combined Arms Center at Fort Leavenworth and the Command Sergeant Major for United States Army Training and Doctrine Command. Both of these assignments put you in a position of great influence over the training and education of our enlisted force. Can you share with us how you approach these roles and talk about some of the great goals you set for yourself to achieve while you were in these positions?
Sure. And another great question. You know, I would not be honest if I didn't fully admit that I probably was in positions that there were better people to be in. There was probably a better Sergeant Major that was available at the time, or probably someone that could have done a better job than I did. For me, the idea that I had the opportunity to serve in jobs like that was humbling. I always felt like I was put in a place to do something that greatly benefited our soldiers. I think that the first thing I would say is, at least for me, and I think it's a good trait for most NCOs, is to always focus on the folks that you're there to serve. You know, these jobs aren't about the person that's in them. It's about what the person in the position can bring and benefit soldiers. So I always try to approach it from the perspective that if I were a soldier today that would have to engage one of the programs that I was responsible for, how would I feel about it? How would I negotiate it? And would it be something that if I were person of that particular rank in that particular school or course or educational program, how would I feel about it? So that's how I really approached all those jobs, and the manner in which I tried to negotiate the things that came around was by talking to as many soldiers and leaders as I possibly could to gain insight on what their life was like and how they would feel about engaging something like that. And what did they need? And what did they want? And what would best not only enrich them, but provide a higher level of readiness for the Army. So I really felt like it was just an honor to be in those positions. And I still feel like training and education inside of our Army is one of the most important things we do. It's not possible to have soldiers that are ready to negotiate the rigors of combat and even the rigors of daily life in the Army if they're not properly trained and educated. So there's a great degree of humility for me that I was even allowed to be a part of that.
John, again, thanks for sharing that with us. And John's accomplishments are many in both those roles, and they didn't stop when he left service and he culminated the service as the TRADOC Sergeant Major. John, you served as the first director of the Institute for Non-Commissioned Officer Professional Development, and you were key in that organization's creation. So why did we need INCOPOD for short, and what gap was it filling, and what was INCOPOD created to achieve?
Well, just another great question. I think to really understand the organization and why it was important at the time and why it's probably still important, you really have to look deep at the education system for non-commissioned officers. So at the time when we stood up the INCOPD, the INCOPOD as you referred to it, there was a great need to accommodate the needs of the soldier that was either at present engaged in combat operations or would be engaged in combat operations. Also, there was a need to maintain the rich history of the non-commissioned officer corps and the professional development system. So for me, I had grown up principally in the combat arms and served in, like most other non-commissioned officers, in squads and platoons and companies and command sergeant major roles. So I understood how busy life really is and how difficult it really is just to be a soldier. So having said that, the INCOPD had the mission of taking all the resources that were currently available to the Army and isolating them into a system that would lead to the best educational outcome. So for me, I could remember clearly being a division command sergeant major and having soldiers deployed all over the world and moving in hundreds of different directions and having to ensure that their family was ready and their units were ready. And thinking of that really drove us to the discussion or the decision that we needed to create an organization that would look across the Army and look at all the best training practices and all the best training opportunities and look at how things like Army policy affected those things. So the INCOPD would not only look at the best opportunities for soldiers to gain the knowledge that was required to fight and win in combat, but it also looked at Army regulatory guidance, policy, and directives from the senior leadership for training and education and how we could use those directives to reach a better outcome. So the INCOPD had sort of a great mission, a vast mission to accommodate the needs of all soldiers in regard to their training opportunities. So when we built the INCOPD, we tried to build it with the very best informed and experiential sorts of opportunities for people. And we tried to bring in the best people that had experienced those sorts of things and could apply years and years of experience and knowledge to providing a better outcome. And I would say that the INCOPD had a pretty robust collection mission as well. We would take a look at all things that were going on in the Army and how soldiers learn and the culture of the Army and the NCO ideology and try to incorporate those things into processes that would best suit the new needs of our soldiers. So I guess that's a long answer to a short question, but the INCOPD was really the nucleus of how we trained and educated our soldiers.
John, and just to elaborate a little bit on that too, during this time period, it was really a transformational period for enlisted education in the history of the Army. I mean, the same time, I believe, please correct me if I'm wrong, that we were transitioning control of enlisted education to solely the enlisted members. I mean, I believe at the time, our former Sergeant Major of the Army, Ray Chandler, was the Commandant of the Sergeant Major Academy. And he became the commandant, where previously there was an officer in charge. Is that correct?
That is correct. At the time, General Dempsey was the commanding general of Training and Doctrine Command. He really had a vision for how education should work across the Army. And I certainly don't want to elaborate too much on how General Dempsey felt or his thoughts, but what I gleaned was that he wanted to put the most experienced people relative to the type of education into positions where they could make the biggest difference in the way ahead. So previously, and as you mentioned, and it shows my age, but when I retire this year, I will have about 41 years of working for the Army. At the point in time that General Dempsey made the decision that we were going to move forward with the things like an enlisted commandant and specific organizations to guide and develop non-commissioned officer education, I had already served as the TRADOC Sergeant Major, and you're very familiar with that role. So you're able to sort of look across the battle space and determine what changes really needed to be made. One of those changes was, for the first time, I think, in history, we installed a Command Sergeant Major, a nominative Command Sergeant Major, as the enlisted commandant of the United States Army Sergeant's Major Academy. It was a huge effort. It may seem to many that it just is something where you would move one sort of person into a position that another sort of person was filling, but there were huge regulatory issues that we had to encounter and try to find workarounds and fixes for, and it required a tremendous amount of staff work even to make it possible. So having said that, there were also things like placing NCO programs under the Sergeant Major Academy and the INCOPD to create synergy and cause a situation where there weren't multiple organizations working on the same problem or the same situation. So we were able to apply all the resources of the United States Army in sort of one direction to build a process that had a result of higher level of delivery and even learning for our non-commissioned officers.
Definitely set the foundation, which brought us to where we are today. And John, we appreciate your leadership and the decisions and the involvement you had in the creation of things like INCOPOD and the transition of control of enlisted education in the hands of our enlisted personnel. John, I'd like to switch subjects real quick to another topic that comes up when you talk to non-commissioned officers and officers alike. It's civilian education. John, I know you're a huge advocate, and as I mentioned before, you're a lifelong learning guy. You're continuing to pursue your education even well after your retirement from both active duty and civil service. Why is civilian education important? And is it more important or less important than professional military education?
That is a great question. And the issue is often misunderstood by many. There are certainly perspectives on both sides of that discussion. I would submit that civilian education is additive to our capabilities of our non-commissioned officers. If you were to simply say, what's more important, being professionally developed or to receive a higher level of civilian education, I would always lean towards professional development. We need soldiers to be experts in their craft. If you're a combat arms soldier, you need to be an expert in your weapons system. You need to be an expert on taking care of soldiers. You need to understand people. You need to be able to fight and win and maintain the highest level of readiness that's possible. And that's true for virtually any branch or any MOS or any person. You know, it's equally important to be the best HR person you can be, or the best medical person you can be, or the best logistician, or the best repairer. So all of those things are paramount in our ability to be ready and able to fight and win our wars. So how does civilian education really impact that? It impacts us from the perspective that it's also important to be knowledgeable on all things in the Army. If I'm a soldier, it's important for me to not only be able to win, but it's also important for me to be able to do things like research problems and develop outcomes and to be the best writer and speaker and understander of information. So civilian education helps mature those things. And as I mentioned earlier, I joined the Army as a high school dropout. I hate to use the term dropout, but that's in fact what I did. I quit school and I came in. And soon after that, leaders helped me realize that not only is it important for me to complete my basic education and my professional military development, but if I want to become the senior leader that the Army requires, I really have to mature myself. I have to be able to understand and process and speak and do all the things that are critically important. So it's not an either or situation. It's not, should I invest in civilian education and not invest in professional military development? It's how can I be the best? So what we've learned over time is that we need to build the best professional military education systems that are possible in the Army. We need to invest in training and education. We need to bring in the best instructors, the best equipment. We need to find the most creative ways to bring education in really realistically the shortest amount of time, because everyone knows that it's been deployed multiple times and served in a lot of different units, that soldiers do not have a lot of time. So while it might seem possible that we can create a NCOPDS school that's 6 months long and bring you every bit of knowledge that you possibly can achieve in that sort of environment, it's also relative to understand that soldiers deploy a lot and they're gone a lot and they train a lot. And at some point in time, they want to be around their family a lot. So you have to consider how you can build courses in shorter amounts of time and different delivery mechanisms with different delivery mechanisms that will achieve the PME goal. But at the same time, we have to make it possible for all soldiers to pursue their civilian education goals. It's paramount that you do that by understanding what they've achieved in PME. So if I attend a PME course, what does that relate and how does that relate to civilian education? So how can I maximize the amount of credits that someone may achieve in a military environment? How can I maximize those credits so when it comes time for him to or her to have time to start to work on their civilian education goals, that they don't have to cover the same ground? They don't have to retake a class in the civilian education world that they already learned in the military education world. So from my perspective, civilian education can make you an even better leader. Now, there's some that would disagree with that. They would say that civilian education doesn't really have an impact on you as a soldier. I would strongly take the position that today, having tried to be a lifelong learner, that I'm in a better situation and I have a greater capacity to understand things that impact soldiers every day. So I think the way we should really look at it is not one or the other, but how can we combine both environments and create synergy to make you the best person that you can be, the best military leader that you can be. And lastly, I would also submit that we should provide opportunities in every way to prepare soldiers for what will be their follow-on, what will be the next phase of their life. As I can demonstrate, and certainly you can as well, that ultimately everyone will retire or leave service. And how do you leave service, of course, is dependent on how you served. So we want every single soldier to transition from the Army with their head high and understand the value that they were to the nation. And certainly there's such a small percentage of our soldiers, of Americans that serve in the military. We need to honor that in every way we can. One of the ways we honor that is by providing them opportunities in service to reach their civilian goals after service. So civilian education helps you be a better leader, and it also helps you with that next phase of life. So I think it's critically important to our development and our success in the Army.
Yeah, and it's a balance. And I'd like to come back to that discussion here in a minute, but I'd like to also expound upon something that you said was different delivery mechanisms. Now, John, many people may not know, I just happen to know, that you're the person that literally laid the framework for the Army's distance learning back when we first started it several years ago. Now, today it's important because of the current environment we're in COVID, and people are very familiar and becoming even more comfortable with it today. But back then, was that the right thing to do?
So years ago, and I sound old when I say that, but years ago, we understood that it wasn't just the Army that needed to look at other delivery mechanisms. It was all of the services, obviously. And there were really two reasons for that. The first reason, or the first need for it, really was based upon what we were doing as an Army, right? So it sounds like a just impossible position today, but there was a time in the Army when we were so busy that there were those in the Army that wanted to suspend our education processes, just not do them until we were less busy or more able to engage those things. There was sort of a momentum building for that sort of thinking process. And at the same time, large universities in the civilian academic world were pursuing distance education. So we had a situation where the Army was sort of locked into the framework that we had always done, where we separate you from your unit, we send you to school, you stay for 6 to 12 weeks, you come back to your unit, you pick up your rucksack and you deploy somewhere. And there was an absence of many considerations, the time that you could spend with your soldiers to develop them to be better leaders, the amount of time you could spend with your family to ensure that family readiness was achieved. And really, there was this attitude in the Army that we weren't ready for those sorts of things, the sort of idea of pursuing distance education. So really what we began process of is looking at how other educational entities engage this process. So there were terms like blended learning and distance learning and internet-based education and all those sorts of things. So what we decided to do was a lot of analysis, a lot of learning and understanding to develop programs that would stimulate the ultimate need to have distance learning platforms. At the time, there were people that were tremendously worried about the idea that the Army would only do distance learning. So there was consternation in the force. There was feelings and attitudes that we were headed in the wrong direction. And what we tried very earnestly to do is to make everyone understand that the ultimate goal would be a blended learning environment where you would engage the things that you could engage in a virtual or a distance learning or an internet-based education. You would engage those things that you could in that environment, and then you would move into a resident classroom to engage the things that you needed to be in a resident classroom for. So if you don't mind, a couple quick examples. So under our old way of thinking, I would bring you into a classroom to do the most rudimentary of topics. I might bring you into an NCO PDS course to talk about an academic area that you easily could read in a manual or take in a internet-based education platform and thereby alleviate the time that you would spend away from your unit and away from your family and provide more latitude in your learning process. It's important to understand that we were doing this before every soldier had a smartphone and everyone had a laptop or an iPad. So it was a very arduous and deliberate process to ultimately get to where I think we are now, where most soldiers pursue civilian education via an internet-based platform, and most soldiers inside of their learning continuum will have some sort of internet-based education that they will engage. And this was all principally new ground for us to cover. So what we wanted to ensure is the Army really didn't get left behind, because today, I think all of us are aware that if you were to apply for some educational program in a civilian education institution, you would almost always be offered the opportunity to achieve that goal in a distance learning environment. I won't elaborate on the schools that pioneered this sort of learning, but it's entirely possible today to reach the doctorate level of education principally in a distance learning environment. So speaking personally, my baccalaureate program and my master's program, I would have never been able to complete if I had to move into a resident classroom. Nor would most soldiers receive the education they do today in a professional military environment if they had to do all of it in a classroom, because there's just simply not enough time. So I think now the Army has become an embracer of these things. And certainly with COVID, we're all become very used to the idea of popping up a computer or an iPad or even your phone and engaging in some educational program or process via the internet. But this was relatively new ground for the Army then. It was not an easy accomplishment for the Army to begin to transition into those environments, but it was necessary. I can't imagine where we would be today if so many leaders didn't embrace the idea that we just have to move into the future. We have to model our behavior after successful practices. And certainly we have to provide opportunities for our soldiers in every way. As you're aware, you know, you certainly had an impact on that as well. It was a difficult time.
And it was, John. And I just, again, want to elaborate a few things you said. So important. And I'm glad you went through such detailed explanation, because for our listeners out there to understand the environment, this wasn't a very widely accepted idea. You know, we had always for years, over 200 years, trained from interaction between one person and another. And selling this was tough. But I'll tell you, I think you said it best. The Army today has embraced it because the current environment, it absolutely requires it. But it also does something else. It proves that it can be effective if delivered effectively and appropriately, right?
Yeah, I would agree with that, SMA. And I would just caveat one other practice that was occurring sort of around the same time, probably from the genesis of internet-based education we developed as we went along. But you probably remember the idea of sending a mobile training team to a unit to deliver NCOES was something that was not widely accepted either. You know, so when we began the process of telling an NCO academy that this particular unit is out the door in 90 days or 120 days or whatever it would be, and that it's just not possible for them to send 80 soldiers to an NCO PDS course, that we're going to take the education to them. So, you know, we've got the Army trying to pick up and accept internet-based education. We've got men and women that are deploying all over the world and trying to take care of their families. And we're telling our understaffed non-commissioned officer academies inside of training the doctor command that you're going to pick up a part of your school and move it to Fort Bragg or Fort Hood or wherever and take the education on the road. So there was a great deal of consternation across the force, and it was just change everywhere. And again, that was some years after we started internet-based education, but it's important to understand that how busy the Army really was and still is, and why all of these things were important at the time and still important now.
We're all enjoying the benefits of it now because they have embraced it, John, and because the framework was laid so long ago and in rough seas in some cases, it was glad that we did it. And it's another mechanism, if done appropriately, to train and educate our soldiers. John, I just want to touch on one point, and you elaborated very clearly and you articulated it perfectly of why civilian education plays such a key role in the development of our non-commissioned officers. But I just have to touch on this point because you had a lot of influence and you had a lot of work involved in making the United States Army Sergeant Major's Academy one of our first accredited enlisted institutions. And this was a long endeavor, and you played an integral role in making this happen. Why was it important to do that?
Well, I think when you look at the United States Army Sergeant's Major Academy and all of NCOPDS, it's important for there to be opportunities for soldiers to achieve credit for what they've already done. So when people like Ray Chandler and Sergeant Major Jimmy Sellers and SMA Dan Daly are working earnestly to try to accredit our institutions, the purpose of that is really to provide the maximum amount of benefit to soldiers. So some of our counterparts have done this very well for years. The level of education that non-commissioned officers receive today is probably higher than it has ever been before. So when you accredit institutions, and not just the Sergeant Major Academy, but beginning with the Sergeant's Major course, you provide the opportunity for those courses and those institutions to actually award credit themselves. So for my entire military career, at least while I was old enough and understood enough, we were reliant on external organizations to accredit our institutions and thereby achieve the credit award that was necessary to, at some point in time, attain a degree. For many years, the credit that soldiers would receive in institutions like the Sergeant Major Academy would often be duplicate credit, the credit that they received, the same credit they received in other schools. So what would really happen is we would have a lot of enlisted soldiers that had a lot of credit, but not a lot of credit they could use towards a degree program. So as a result, it would take years and years for soldiers to achieve their educational goals. But when you facilitate the accreditation of something like the Sergeant Major Academy, you provide opportunities for that institution to award credit and grant degree programs. So today, when a Sergeant Major or a Master Sergeant attends the Sergeant Major Academy, if he hasn't been able to realize his educational goals, he can now do that. And he can come out of the academy with a degree or close to a degree. So there's that tangible reward that soldiers receive. But it also provides a sort of a metric for the Sergeant Major course to attain to grant that degree program. There's all sorts of ancillary things that occur, like a higher level of education requirement for those that facilitate the education. Different educational standards that have to be achieved inside of an organization to receive the accreditation from those accrediting bodies. So all of that works together to really provide greater opportunities for soldiers. Now, it would not be fair if I didn't say that people work very deliberately to ensure that it's not about just gaining college credit. All of the commandants at the Sergeant Major Academy, the Non-Commissioned Officer Center of Excellence, have worked very earnestly to ensure that there's the right balance between those requirements as a non-commissioned officer and a sergeant major and the ability to award credit. So if you attend the sergeant major course, you're not attending that course to achieve a degree. You're attending that course to be the best sergeant major that you possibly can be, to provide the force the best leadership that's available. But in the process of that, accrediting that body allows that non-commissioned officer to receive the requisite college credit and to work towards a degree while he's there. So my hat's off to all of those great military leaders that were involved in making that happen. And as we move forward, people like Sergeant Major Schmidt at the Academy now are pursuing additional educational opportunities to grant more degrees or a higher level of degree while non-commissioned officers engage in a professional military education.
John, thanks for that explanation. And I know it's clear to our listeners out there that you are an integral part in many of the historical moments of the development of our non-commissioned officer corps and where it has advanced to today. And I know that there's wonderful people, as you mentioned, that are going to continue this legacy and continue to build the best non-commissioned officer education system that we possibly can. Now, in your current role, you are the advisor to the Sergeant Major of the Army, and you advise him on strategic level leadership issues for the benefit of our non-commissioned officers. Could you share with us what's in the future? What are you and the SMA talking about? Where are we headed?
I'll share something that we're working now that's critically important to our senior non-commissioned officers. Under your guidance and watch as the SMA, we began some of these programs. Certainly, it's the SMA, the current SMA's desire to expand and expound on things and successes of the past. So one of the things that we're doing today is we're working very earnestly with several civilian education organizations to look at how we train our most senior leaders. So in my current role, my principal focus is on the sergeant major grade, and specifically the nominative sergeant major, those that serve at division levels and higher. We're trying to align the things that they receive along the NCO-PDS continuum and the opportunities for degree potential in the United States Army Sergeant Major Academy with a continuing evolution of learning for them as well. So you might say, well, why is that important that we educate those that are so senior? The relative worth of having senior leaders that are even more educated has a direct impact on the readiness of the United States Army. So we're working with these civilian educational entities to provide ways to better train and provide more training and education for our most senior leaders so they can provide the sorts of guidance, whether it's in policy or practice, in organizations to build even better programs for our soldiers. So we're working very earnestly on that. We believe that sometime next year we'll see greater opportunities for those that are most senior. And we're also working with organizations like the Combined Arms Center at Fort Leavenworth and the NCO Center of Excellence to credential and help with the credentialing effort that the Army is so sturdily and so massively engaged in, to providing credentialing opportunities for our soldiers. And some of those credentialing opportunities are sort of non-traditional. Some of them may be in fields that we don't really even think about or haven't explored, and some of them are very obvious. So we're working deliberately to do that. One more quick thing that I would be remiss if I didn't say, a part of providing better opportunities for our soldiers really relates to providing better opportunities for their spouses. We're looking at ways that we can enrich the education practice for our Army spouses. Today, for example, we have a course going on for our nominative sergeants major spouses that's facilitated from the Army War College. And obviously, we're engaging in a virtual environment now. So to summarize the answer, we want to build opportunities for our most senior leaders so they can build opportunities for the more junior. They can provide better policy and better practice. And we want to build credentialing opportunities for all soldiers, including those that are very senior. And we want to provide opportunities for our Army spouses to engage in education to better prepare them for the rigors of Army life.
Well, John, we look forward to seeing all these initiatives develop in the future. And we know that we're in good hands with the people that we have in those positions. Unfortunately, I'm told that you've announced your retirement from civil service. And as I mentioned previously, John has spent a lifetime literally serving our country as both a soldier and as a Department of the Army civilian. So, John, what's next for you? What's next for the Sparks family?
You know, I think all of us look forward to the next chapter in our lives. And, you know, you have all those things that you grew up in the Army saying that someday when I retire, I'm going to do that, or I want to move here or spend time, more time with family. With age comes other opportunities. So for me today, as you mentioned earlier, I've started a doctorate program and I'm excited about that because I think that all of us have to continue to learn. I mean, if you really put it in perspective, the things that the Army teaches us, we have to continue to maintain our physical fitness, right? So you want to get old like me someday and you want to be able to still do all the things that you really want to do. You want to be able to run and do all the things that are important to you. So, you know, that is a big part of my life is to continuing to maintain a level of fitness that's commensurate with the activities that I wish to engage. I want to continue to learn as a person. I am not planning to ever seek any employment again. I just want to engage the doctorate degree so I can learn more about life. So I'll do that. My family and I are very involved in our church and our community. So retiring gives me an opportunity to engage those activities more. You know, I would be remiss if I just didn't say that with age comes children that marry and have grandchildren now, or I have grandchildren now. So all of those things are hugely important to me. And I think that, as I said earlier, I'm on my 41st year with the Army and I can leave happily knowing that I may not have done the best job that could have been done, but I did the best job that I could do. So thank you for that question.
Well, thank you, John. And thanks for your service and sacrifice for over four decades to this country and our nation. And we are truly indebted to you. So, John, it was a pleasure. And unfortunately, we are running out of time for our broadcast today. But I want to give you the opportunity for a few last words. Do you have any final thoughts you'd like to provide our listeners?
I do, just quickly. And one, SMA, I appreciate the opportunity to work with you. We've spent time both at TRADOC and in your role as the SMA, so I appreciate that. And I appreciate SMA Grinston a great deal for allowing me to continue to do all the things that I felt were necessary. So I have great gratitude. I thank God for the opportunity to be a soldier. I think that all of us should just take a moment, you know, to sometimes when you go in whatever space that you have that's quiet, whether it's a place you go in your home or a walk you take in the woods, or for me, a ride on a motorcycle, to think about what it means to be a soldier and think about how important it is to our nation. So I would say to any soldier that's listening or family member that's listening, your country owes you a great debt. And the idea that whether you serve for 2 years or 40 years, you're providing a service to our nation that most people won't. And without you, we would cease to have a nation. It has been my great honor to be affiliated with the United States Army. And it's been my great honor to have served around so many, not just incredible soldiers, but incredible people and incredible citizens of the United States. So thank you very much.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, it's very inspiring words from a soldier, a father, and a lifelong learner. Thank you, John, for your time today. Our time has come to an end to close this edition of Soldier Today podcast. All of us here at the Association of United States Army want to thank Command Sergeant Major retired John Sparks for his tremendous service throughout his career as both a soldier and an Army civilian, and for sharing his insights and thoughts about enlisted education and professional development. John, I can say from all of us across the country, thank you. Thank you for all you've done to improve our Army and maintain the Army's reputation as the greatest land power force in the world.
To all our listeners, thanks for joining us. Be sure to subscribe to the Army Matters podcast on iTunes and everywhere podcasts are found. The Army Matters podcast series is brought to you by the Association of the United States Army, the U.S. Army's professional association. Member supported, Army connected. Visit us at AUSA.org for more information or to become a member. Your membership helps AUSA continue to carry out its mission to educate, inform, and connect with the total Army, our industry partners, and our supporters of a strong national defense. For questions or to provide topic recommendations, email us at podcast@AUSA.org. Have a great Army Day. Hooah.